So in this episode of The Leader Smith, I'm going to be talking about what it would take or what you would have to do if you were a newly appointed leader just before the pandemic hit, or if you just are taking over now and you're trying to wade your way through a crisis when you can't really be there with your team. This will be interesting. Stay tuned.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, one management professor claims that he can help you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. You are listening to The Leader Smith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdis.
Okay, so this is an article in Fast Company magazine just came out. The title is Taking Over During a Crisis. Here's how to lead without alienating your new employees. And it's a great article. I mean, I know that I've been critical about some popular articles in Entrepreneur or Forbes or whatever, but Nihar Chaida, please forgive me if I'm slaughtering your name, Nihar, did a phenomenal job with this article. Okay, so the premise is this. Look, during the best times, I mean, in an optimal scenario, there are all kinds of resources about how to become a better leader, and these are the kinds of things that we talk about daily. It's our bread and butter, right? In spite of that, 40%, he says, 40% of newly appointed managers derail in their first 18 months in a new role, which is tragic, which is also why we're talking about how to be a better leader constantly. Okay, now, if you're appointed during a time like this, I mean, if you just came into a leadership role now, it's extra hard. I mean, you've got more on your plate and you have fewer ways to be able to do leadership. Now, leadership is always leadership. Always, always, always is getting things done through people. It's not about you being more productive than other people. It's about you helping them, empowering them to actually do their jobs. That's leadership. And right now, it's a tricky place to be. So he says this, you have to be open to new ways of observing your team's performance. Now, that can become tricky, okay? Generally, if you came into a new role, you would do things like get to know people, sit around in their office and talk with them a little bit, observe them, just, you know, hey, who are the superstars here? And what do you do? And what are the obstacles that get in your way? And you'd ask those kinds of questions. And it's personal. You'd go to lunch maybe, or just, you know, that time that you spend in the initial few weeks or months is so valuable. And sometimes people discount it. They just jump right in without getting to know people. And that's a bad plan. Or even worse, sometimes people will come in with their own plan and say, this is my plan. Now this is how we can right the ship and let's do this without getting to know anybody. That's like the height of arrogance. Don't do that. But let's say it was optimal times and you could go to people's offices or the shop floor or whatever the scenario is and get to know them and understand them. You can't do that now. Now you have to be more creative, because even if you're talking on the phone or talking in a video conference, it's not the same as actually sitting down and breaking bread with people. Now, Nihar talks about an executive coaching client of his who's promoted just 2 months before the pandemic. And so while he's planning to get to know everybody, and now roll back the clock. I mean, things really started in about March. In February, I remember I was starting to think, uh-oh, this is getting bad. What's going to happen? In January, we thought nothing of it. Like at CSU, we thought we were going to have a trip to Italy to go see a number of businesses in Italy. And, you know, we were talking in February about, well, you know, even if, you know, things are bad in the State Department's guidelines, we're probably still going to go. No, I mean, it all fell apart. So this person coming into power just a few months before the pandemic happening, he probably took this kind of thing for granted as well. Now, his plan was to go visit globally scattered teams at their locations. Can't do that anymore. So what does he do? He has to manage through virtual meetings. If you have been through lots of virtual meetings, and I have, it's not the same. You just understand you can't make the same kind of connections. It's more laborious, even though you haven't had to travel. You don't have the commute time to the office, but it's just more difficult. So The author says that through his coaching, he encourages himself, and this is brilliant, he encourages himself to ask, if I can't go to them, how is there a way for them to come to me? Now that's brilliant, because what he's doing is he's still making that contact, but he's reversing it. And when you reverse it, you have to reverse it in a specific way. He says this: the executive decided to ask his team to send him packets of photos that would come to him to get him up to speed on their work, since he couldn't visit themselves. His team leaders also asked the operations managers on the ground to take short videos of themselves walking about in their work and any challenges, similar to an in-person interaction. Now that's brilliant. It's brilliant for a few reasons. One, he still makes the connection. Two, who wants to look bad in front of the boss, right? So it's giving them every opportunity to show themselves and what they do and how they do it in the best light possible. You can retake it as many times as you want. There's no real fear of, you can only make a first impression one time. No, you can work, you can reshoot and re-edit. So there's something really powerful about this. Okay, now he says there are a few things that you need to do here in this process. One, adapt to your employees' new vulnerabilities. We're all at home, right? And so leaders have to recognize that their employees in their home environment, while they're trying to work at home, it's just not the same. I've rarely taken videos in my home office. That's where I am right now. I've rarely done that when I was, for the last 9 years, almost everything would be in my office at work. The exceptions would be quickly sending some feedback to my students. I would do that once in a while, or during a hurricane. I mean, that was pretty much it. Everything else is in my work office. So now shooting in my office at home is just, it's a different environment. I generally have to chase the kids out into the backyard so that I can have quiet. And it's just, it's different. A lot of people are not comfortable shooting, you know, their videos or doing their video conferences at home. They're trying to find a place that doesn't look bad. It's almost like Facebook, where, you know, you're comparing notes between, you know, this person's purported awesome life and your life. And it's kind of like that, where people put these backgrounds, you know, oh, that their home looks great. Their home looks, but, you know, you just have a blank wall or something. It just feels weird. Okay. So people might be uncomfortable in their homes, doing that with kids making noise in the background and that kind of thing. But that's a double-edged sword. I mean, think about it on the other side. I was encouraged to begin this podcast. I began the Leadersmith podcast here in May, just after the school year let out. Okay, so we're in the middle of pandemic mode in quarantine. So I shoot the video and then I record the audio for the podcast, but I use the video for other clips as well. And I didn't like the idea of having the background in the picture of the videos, the parts that I still use and put on YouTube. And I didn't like it. But then I watched things like The Tonight Show, and The Tonight Show was just, I mean, he was on his set, but he was doing things through Zoom, and it was just people in their background. Or The Daily Show commercials would come on, and he's on his couch at home. And I'm thinking, like, well, okay, so this is just the new normal, and we have to get used to the new normal. But that doesn't mean that people aren't still uncomfortable in their home environments, projecting that into the world. Okay, he says that we have to keep in mind that new members of your team are also trying to gauge you. In the same way that you're trying to make a good impression on them, they're trying to make a good impression on you. You're trying to understand who's strong, who's weak, that kind of thing. They're trying to feel out your weaknesses. And so that's really interesting that it's working both ways. And it's always working both ways. It's just harder to do right now. And during the pandemic, during quarantine, and as we're trying to figure out whether we can return to work or not, he says this: the pandemic is forcing us to expose parts of ourselves that we usually wouldn't share. And I think that's absolutely right. So we have to be sensitive to that. Okay. He also says this: check your prejudices around remote productivity. Okay. So I saw a lot of this. I wear another hat as the director of instructional technology at Charleston Southern University. And that means that if somebody had a hard time with Blackboard or some remote technology or some online instruction, and they couldn't figure something out, they would call me, and I would you know, get up, go to their office and work it out with them and help them do whatever it was that they needed to do. I've been teaching online, at least partly online since 2000, which is like a grandfather in education and online instruction. I only got online for the first time myself in 1995, and that was because I was in graduate school. So I've got years of experience with this. Okay, so all that to say this, this was a wonderful gig before we got to the pandemic. I mean, a few times a week, somebody would contact me. I'd go over there and they're always happy to see me because they want to work out their problems and I'd get everything sorted out. Well, the pandemic hit and now I'm trying to service everyone in the university. Now, there are other IT people that are doing things too, but I had like 18-hour days for weeks straight just trying to keep everybody on task so that they could service their students. What I found in this process was that a lot of people had prejudice about working online, especially in certain departments. And I'm not going to name the departments, but some were like militantly against being online and they had the largest learning curve. Same thing in corporate America. He points this out, and you know, introverts love this policy. Like my wife, the introvert, she loves the idea of going to church, you know, by watching it on TV, where you don't have to shake people's hands when the pastor says, "Now turn and greet somebody," right? Like, that's not her thing, right? Extroverts struggled with it. And the reason that they struggle with it is because they equate being there with productivity. And that's not necessarily so. Introverts might be even more productive. In fact, extroverts who need to get work done will probably be more productive if there's no one to distract them or no one coming in their office all the time while they're trying to get things done. But extroverts tend to equate productivity with being there. And that's not necessarily so. And we see this even at CSU in our numbers, with enrollment is done really well by sending everybody to telecommute and work independently. So it's just an odd thing. Okay, so you have to understand that. He said, when working remotely, resist projecting your discomfort about productivity. Why? Because as an extrovert and you want to have that, and I get it, I'm more extroverted than not, and I would rather be there with people, but I understand that you can't always. Now, if I think that productivity is tied to being there, or if even worse, if I'm a micromanager, and we're going to do a whole thing on micromanaging. There's a great piece by Gallup that just came out about micromanaging. I'm going to do that in a future episode. If I, you know, just don't trust you enough that I have to be there and look over your shoulder, right? That's a problem. But in this kind of environment, what if I tried to just apply that at, you know, through video conferences? I'd be annoying you to no end, okay? I'd be demonstrating mistrust. I'd be taking away your autonomy, your feeling like you can do it this way. No, there's something great in this, and that is that because I can't meddle with you, you actually have more freedom. I can't remember the book. I read this a number of years ago. It was talking about the differences between the Army and the Navy and the way that their command structure is set up. This was just one little part of the book. The Navy actually had more autonomy for their ship's captains because the Navy structure couldn't necessarily think before they had a telegraph communications where they could have instant communication. A Navy vessel goes to the other side of the world. They're essentially on their own. That captain has to be autonomous and make his decisions for his crew. Whereas in the Army, the lines of communications are usually a lot tighter, so they had less autonomy. And I thought, wow, there's an interesting parallel there. Okay, so you got to get over that trying to micromanage or trying to control because you think that physical proximity is the same as productivity or leads to productivity, and it doesn't necessarily. Okay, next one, giving before taking. And again, this guy is brilliant. I can't more highly recommend this author, or at least this article. I haven't read a lot by him, but I'm going to in the future. Give before taking and pull before pushing. And he says this, that you have to find time to meet, you know, let's say in normal environment, you're trying to meet with a mentor to get, you know, before a decision. That's great, but now you're asking for something. The situation that we're in the pandemic has changed the equation. So now people are busier than ever. I know that I've been more busy being, you know, during this time online than I was before, even though I don't have to commute. So you have to now kind of reverse the role. And instead of thinking about, you know, how much you're asking for, how much you can give. He says this: for this reason, to establish yourself for success in a new role, you must prioritize giving value rather than taking what you need from others. In the past, being pushy or salesy was relatively harmless, but now it can destroy valuable relationships. That's brilliant. That's right. Give before you take. Now, that should be a rule anyway. Now, give before you take is just good advice in any time, but right now it's at a premium. So he says, stop pushing your agenda, start pulling them toward you. And so, and again, great advice. Rather than, and I'm quoting now, rather than merely putting time onto their calendar, try reaching out with a message asking if you can set up a meeting to talk about an issue and why this conversation may be helpful to them. So if I'm reading him right, he's saying, ask what issues are important to them. I could be wrong, but I think that's the approach. And that's exactly what I did when I was I was the director of the graduate programs in the College of Business at CSU. And the first year, you know, we went to formal reviews, and we got there. And now I've been trying to build relationships all along, but we went to formal reviews and said, okay, what can we do for you? Huh? No, I thought this was a review. No, what can we do for you? Tell us what you need. And when we give you what you need, like so, and they said like things like, well, you ask us to shoot videos, but we don't have camcorders. Okay. USB cameras for the computer. Now that's kind of dating myself of when this time period was. But if they didn't have that and we want them to create videos, well, that becomes a problem. So that $50 per person investment was a cheap investment to tell them we think a lot of you and we care and we're listening and we're trying to supply you with what you need. And so going there and asking what can we do for you was just a remarkable turnaround, and that's what you need to be doing. He says, ask before telling, pull before pushing, invite before expecting. That's exactly the approach that will get you where you need to go. It will help them understand that you are there and you care about them. And I've said this before, but if you have my back, you get my heart. That's the way that this works. Okay. So I can't say enough good things about Nihar Chaida. I hope I pronounced that guy's name right. This is a great article. I would strongly encourage you to read the article itself. I will link it below. But this is the way that you need to approach it. And now, even if you're not a new manager, think about approaching your people this way. Okay, this leads us to our quotation for contemplation for today. And it comes from Orson Swett Marden. He says this: we must give more in order to get more. It is the generous giving of ourselves that produces the generous harvest. And Orson Swett Marden could not be more right. That's exactly right. Give before you get. And give not even to get. Give just because you're trying to help them. Your job is to empower them so that they can do it. That's leadership, is getting work done through them. Give more. All right. Thank you for your time. I hope this helps you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. The kind of leader that you would want to follow.